Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hello everybody and welcome back to the Goldbridge Saves Football Podcast with me and Will Brazier as we dissect another Premier League weekend. Some people said it's a boring bit of a drag weekend, but I tell you what, we've had great weekends with less topics to talk about. We've got Trent being booed, we've got owners on the pitch not happy with their managers, we've got controversial red cards, and we've also got manager of the Premier League season. It's changed big time. Who would that be now? Would it be Emery? Would it be Nuno? Would it be somebody else? Arteta? Probably not. It probably is somebody else. Will, how are you doing before we get into these big topics?
Yeah, I'm very well, thank you. A weekend spent in the sun with beer. I was actually on a pale ale, which I believe is something you can drink these days. That was delicious. And so are these topics.
Yeah, lovely weekend in the UK. Very, very sunny. And glad to hear you were in the sun and not reading the sun, because your opinions would be not worth listening to. Let's start off with Liverpool against Arsenal. I got to say, I was going to do a watch along on That's Football. I saw the sun outside and thought, you know what, I won't be doing that. I'll be having a couple of Coronas instead. But I did have it on the TV outside. And look, to be fair, it wasn't a terrible game. But the big talking point clearly was the second goal offside? No, Trent being booed. What are your thoughts? I obviously had a very successful tweet last night, which was drink-fueled. I can't take credit for it. Corona really did. It was just a typical type when you've had a drink and it did well. I thought, fair play. If only I could do that normally. But it's definitely a controversial topic.
Can I guess how many Coronas? Because I've had it where I've been drunk and there's a perfect sort of median where you've had the right amount of alcohol that sort of fuels the creativity, the sort of, oh yeah, I am going to post this. So I'm going to go, you had two and you're on your third when you posted that.
Would that be correct? Literally spot on. Yeah.
Yeah.
If we're being more accurate, I'd had a can of Madry and then I was halfway down my second bottle. So it's about right. Yes.
Yeah. It's just in that sweet spot. You get a bit, yeah, I am going to take him on. But look, you weren't doing the stream, which also should be commendable, because there's no point streaming that shit. Nobody was bothered, but we have got talking points on it. Trent, let me say, I thought Andy Roberts summed it up absolutely perfectly. He was like, I don't know if you saw the post-match interview he did. He basically said, I'm not going to tell people what to say. This is what I think. He's my best mate. Good luck to him in the future. I'd like him to stay, but he's not. And really, I think it's just a bit of a storm in a teacup, because the Premier League's finished, relegation's finished, we've got the Champions League to look forward to. But they're just trying to make a big deal out of something that I think by the end of it all will be forgot going forward, just because I also think everyone compares it to still sort of Gerrard and Carragher, but those guys hadn't won the Premier League. Those guys, they'd won the Champions League, but they'd not had that era of success that Trent's had. So I just think those comparisons are a bit false. And I'm not going to sit here and tell Liverpool fans what to say, though, or what to do, because if I'd had three Coronas and I was at Anfield, I might have booed. I might not have booed.
I think that's a great point. I was talking about this morning. It's like, I would like to think I wouldn't boo. I've always said I'd like to think I wouldn't boo. But I think amongst a crowd where people boo, impromptu, I might just go, I'm having a bit of that. I'm having a bit of boo. So, I think you've sort of nailed it, really. It's like, my point from about Rio's comment or anybody else's comment is, of course, you've got entitled to an opinion. We're having an opinion on a podcast. But I think when you say, I don't understand why Liverpool fans are booing, you've literally answered your own question. You're not a Liverpool fan. And, you know, if it happened at Blues, if it happened at Man United, then, it's a very personal thing. And then it's like sticking your nose in someone else's business, isn't it? And then, like, you're going to be like, well, you're not a Blues fan, or et cetera. But Andy Robertson's spot on. I mean, that's probably the modern... I think that's the big problem, really. I think that's the modern footballer, isn't it? He's my best mate. I'd like him to stay, but if he's not, I wish him all the best. Because Andy Robertson's not really a Liverpool fan, is he? He's paid to play for Liverpool. And I know they all say they love the clubs, but that's modern football. When I was watching football like 30 years ago, Brian Robson was driving round in a car that said Brian Robson, and it's sponsored by Bristol Street Motors. It was a much more... players were closer to the fans, and therefore they were closer to the club. I think nowadays footballers are brands in themselves. They have teams around them. And, you know, this is a massive opportunity for Trent. And to turn his back on Liverpool was probably quite a big decision. And he's made it, and he should back himself to do it. And he's not wrong for doing it. But on the other hand, he's run his contract down, he's in his prime, and he's leaving the club he loves. And those fans have got every right to go, I'm not going to wish you all the best, I'm going to boo you. And I think as long as it's booing, football's theatre anyway. So, yeah, I think
it's not been helped recently because I don't know about you, but when we started the season, especially around Christmas time, it was like, oh, he's definitely going. Mm. And then I think with the Salah and the Van Dijk stuff, there's maybe a bit of a false dawn there. So that sort of almost given people a bit of false hope and thought maybe he was signing. But I mean, if you look back, I think it was around Christmas time or just before that, he sat down with Sky Sports to do one of their formats. And it's where he said that he wanted to be the first right back to win the Ballon d'Or.
Yeah.
And that's all you've got to know, really, isn't it? Mm. Like, that tells you, rightly or wrongly, about what he wants to do. But also, again, it comes off the back of winning everything at Liverpool and especially winning the Premier League this season. But then on the flip side of it as well, there is something different about Liverpool. Like, you know, Liverpool fans will tell you that and people sort of throw shade at that. But it is a very special club for numerous different reasons. And when you are from that area and you play and you end up being one of the best players in the world, there is a... I can see where that extra passion comes from because, you know, you're a fan, you're from that area, you'd be like, well, why? This is my dream.
Yeah.
And he's lived out that dream. But yeah, I think that Ballon d'Or comment was very telling.
And it certainly might not be the last time he gets booed in his career, because if he's going to a club where you do get booed, no matter what you've done, Real Madrid is certainly going to be that place. So he better get used to it, because unless he's going to win the Ballon d'Or every year, he probably will get booed a little bit at Real Madrid at some point. And I think as well, it's not been helped by the fact that Van Dijk and Salah have both stayed, because if you're Trent, you're probably thinking for the last 6 months, they're right at the end of their career. They're probably going to fancy Saudi or something. If one of them go as well, I'll be okay. They then stay, which at their age sort of shows a real commitment to Liverpool. And then he's in his prime, running his contract down. That will be a mitigating factor. I also think as well, the reaction from people like Carragher, etc., would be a little bit different if Trent had stayed and Salah had gone. I think he'd be a lot harsher on Salah than he has been on Trent. Although, albeit he has said, don't tell Liverpool fans how to think. But look, it's not everybody who booed him anyway. Some people aren't that bothered. Some people did. This is surely what we want in football. I liken it to the Tuchel and Conte handshake. I don't think they should have got a ban. I thought it was actually good to see a little bit of bit of rivalry in it. We don't see a lot of that in football, and you know, fans showing emotion in a controlled way. Booing's not toxic. It's not abuse. I'm all for it.
And also, it's a bit different now, isn't it? Because I think, you know, I'm not a man of the stat, but obviously under Klopp, Trent was coming into more of that midfield areas this season. It's gone back to more of a right back sort of traditional position, and you know, Gary Neville said it plenty of times, it's not the sexiest of positions, isn't it? It's definitely become more of a controlling position over the years. But I think out of those three, Van Dijk, Salah, Trent, in terms of their importance on the team, to get those two re-signed and Trent to go, if you take away him being a local, I think that's the right order.
Yeah, 100%. Just in relation to Arsenal themselves. Oh, what was it? Somebody said about Declan Rice, actually. You mentioned it just before we went live.
Yeah, I was saying, I think Carragher was saying up in his Sky Sports coverage, basically said, speaking about if Arsenal weren't to do anything, that doubts could start to kick into some of their star players. He mentioned about Declan Rice. Mm. Gary Neville was sort of talking about Arteta was... I don't know if he said he was lucky. He was basically just saying that Arteta having a job after five seasons and not winning a trophy is slightly unprecedented in the modern era. But like we said so many times, haven't we, that this felt like Arsenal season to go for it, especially with Liverpool not coming out of nowhere, but Arsenal were definitely the right candidates to go for it. And if they're to have another season of Champions League football, not win a trophy, does the pressure start to go on not just the manager, but some of the star players?
Yeah, I think Saliba would be a player that sort of rings to mind on that one, because he's so talented. He's still quite young. And I think that you probably would be looking at that. But I don't know about you. I think the Tchouaméni deal that they announced on Friday is a real good step forward. We expect they're going to bring a striker in, and maybe if they bring a good winger in. I think Arsenal are in a good place. I think... collectively their season, we've spoken about it across the year, silly red cards, couple of big injuries, Odegaard at the start of the season, then Saka, they're too far off Liverpool, no striker of course. There's reasons why Arsenal are where they are. Look at their bench against PSG as well compared to PSG. I think next season for Arsenal is the season, and I think it will decide a lot of people's futures. I think it will decide Arteta's future. But I have a feeling that next season they will be, I mean, they probably won't want it, but they might, for me, be favourites to win the league, because we don't know what Liverpool are going to do. And I don't know whether I'd put Liverpool as favourites just because they've won the Premier League. I think Arsenal might be favourites next year.
Yeah, it definitely feels like a very strong three-horse race. If Arsenal go in as title favourites, I just worry about something around that pressure. And, you know, I think managers have too much to do post-match, but some of the post-match press analysis and comments that he made after that Champions League defeat, where he was sort of saying they were the best side in the Champions League, you know, and everything like that. I just worry that the pressure gets to them a bit too much. And sometimes I think they don't help their situation. They sort of add to the fuel to the fire on that. So if they were to go into a Premier League season as title favourites, I think that would just, in a weird way, make Liverpool and Man City more favourites in my eyes, just because they've been there, done it, know how to run the machine and just play those mind games that Fergie did so well all those years ago.
Yeah, just on that, for this season, we spent a little bit of time, obviously, Liverpool-Arsenal yesterday, the guard of honour. Is that a fair reflection of not only who the best team in the Premier League is, obviously, but manager of the year? We were talking a few weeks ago about Emery, we were talking about Slot, we were talking about Nuno, we were talking about Arteta. I think we can leave out Ange and Amorim, regardless of whether they win the Europa League. That's not going to get them manager of the year. Slot, I think, to me now has to be given manager of the year. Obviously, it's a very obvious one, but I do think there was a few niche arguments around Arteta if they'd got to the Champions League final and won it. Nuno, if they'd got Champions League football. I mean, Emery, in a certain sense, they still could get Champions League football, but I don't think fifth place and a Champions League quarterfinal for Villa is quite good enough to take manager of the year away from Slot, who has slotted in perfectly, to coin a very well-used joke. And in his first season has won the Premier League by a considerable margin, which ain't easy. He's got a curveball.
I think Eddie Howe, because it will kind of tie into another conversation. I think to get Champions League football sort of disrupts maybe the top four, top five people would have had.
Yeah.
Some people, I don't think, where did you have them? I think, didn't you have them down in like eighth or ninth?
I don't know. I need to look at mine again, but I don't think. I think I had them a bit higher than that. I don't know. You sometimes get mixed up on years, but I think I was sort of saying they might get top five, but I don't think I had them in the top five. A bit of a dark horse.
I'll throw you under the bus. I definitely didn't have them up there. So I think to get Champions League football, but to win a trophy, and I think that's going to be even more like, basically, we're bringing into this into the conversation because people are speaking about Arteta, Champions League football. We said how good it is for revenue. You build the club and then hopefully you have that moment of that culmination of winning the Premier League, a Champions League, but it's not guaranteed.
No.
And for Newcastle to, well, was it 50, 60 years, get that off their back, win the trophy, then carry on and get Champions League football, playing some really good stuff. I think that's sort of really going under the radar, and trophies are just so important. And that's why I'd put him up there for me.
I think it's a good shout. Let us know in the comments. Yeah, I certainly think, I can't think of anybody else that, I mean, look, there was a few pretenders to the throne at times, Bournemouth, Fulham. I think.
What about if Palace finish top half and win the FA Cup?
Outside chance, yeah. I mean, the first time in my lifetime I've seen them do it. So yeah, I think you have to hold that up there. That's why I mentioned Emery. They could still get Champions League football. It's not a bad season for them. But yeah, I think you're right. I think Eddie Howe or Slot. I'd go Slot. I think it's winning the Premier League is going to give him the pip. But what I will say about Newcastle is when you look at the squad, they've got good players, but they don't have much of a squad. And so, you know, where you are over 38 games in the Premier League and to win the Carabao Cup as well, I think they've done remarkably well. And their home form is a big thing for them.
But I wonder if they'll be in a better position to, because the Champions League that they got last time was sort of out of nowhere, wasn't it? And almost with these revenues, you have to plan and sort of project where you can be so you can have that money and capital to spend. I wonder if where they're at now, they'll be in a position to strengthen. Like, you know, go back to the start of the season when Villa got in and we were having to talk about them selling Douglas Luiz, and, you know, it's come good for them slightly with the loan players that they've brought in. But even them, I feel like they're sort of, the Champions League football would be very important for them to sort of how they build their recruitment for next season.
I think where we are at the moment, I think Newcastle will struggle next season because, as I said, the first team's good, but the squad's not. They haven't had European football this year. When they had European football last year, they struggled, and you play a lot more games in it now as well. I think the Premier League is going to be very competitive again. And yeah, I think unless they, well, look, we know they're rich, Newcastle, but can they get the money in? If they can go out and add three or four quality players to what they've got, then you build again. But the problem is, I don't know whether they can get the money in. So that's always going to be their issue, isn't it, really?
Also, at that sort of level, and to be fair, I don't know what to say, but Emery does it well. They feel like real coaches of players, and it's real prevalent with Newcastle, isn't it? With like with how well Murphy's done this season and improved, like a player that you'd write off. If I started a save for Newcastle, I'd literally sell him straight away. But like with him, Eddie Howe's coached him, you know, even Dan Byrne, and you look at players at Aston Villa. So maybe they can afford to look at a lower caliber of player, whereas, you know, Man City and Liverpool wouldn't be able to do that and sort of coach them up and build the squad out that way.
I think Chelsea have been a bit lucky in this race. I mean, Newcastle are third now and they do deserve it. But I was looking at Villa, and I know you won't like this, but they've lost one in something like eight and won seven in eight, and they're still not in the top five. And you look at it, Chelsea fifth, Villa sixth, 63 points the pair. And Chelsea landing on Liverpool last week was just so, you know, fortuitous. You'd look at that at Villa as a Villa fan and you'd go, Chelsea won't beat Liverpool. But then Liverpool turn up having just won the title and are nowhere near it, are they? But look, it's still there. Look, there's two games to go. Chelsea got to go Forest on the last day, and they've got Man United on Friday where they'll probably win. Villa have got Spurs and Man United, so they can win both. But
it's sort of weird, isn't it? Like, I don't know, you've probably gone into it in length about how Spurs and United have dropped off a cliff in the league, but Villa have got to play both of those teams, but they play one before and one after the final.
Yeah.
So I wonder how that will sort of play into things as well.
Well, they've got Spurs on Friday night. You know what Ange is like? I ain't going to risk anybody for a Castlemaine 4X. And
honestly,
I think they'll win that.
Sorry.
They'll win that.
Yeah, sorry. Honestly, I think it needs to be said, we've been doing this podcast for 2 years, but the trajectory of your Ange impression, where, you know, I started off as the rights holder.
Yeah.
And I've had to pass it over. It's just incredible.
And he's going to get the sack now. It's wasted. Wasted. Unless he gets like, no, he's not going to get another Prem job, is he? But what are you going to go with top five? Liverpool, Arsenal, Newcastle, Man City are probably still going to get it. So it's Chelsea or Villa. I think Forest have blown it now.
I mean, they're technically, mathematically is a world where Arsenal could still miss out on Champions League football.
Not going to happen.
I'll go. I think it's the top four, and then I think Villa will do Chelsea.
I think Chelsea have been quite lucky this season, and they've got, you know, I think they're lucky to be in the Club World Cup because they won the Champions League 4 years ago, and that's a nice little 50 million for them, and then they'll get a load more money. Bowley just seems to get away with it, I think, and can always spend money. So I think Chelsea will do it, but it's going to be really harsh on Villa because they could end up in a situation where they've won 9 of their last 10 and still not get top 5, which is just incredible. Incredible, really. Go on.
No, I was just going to, I think that Club World Cup will actually sneak up on us. Mm. I know it's on Channel 5 and DAZN, and, you know, we're not exactly excited, but I think it's £97 million or dollars if you win it.
Is every game on Channel 5 or just a few?
No, they've got selective ones. So, but I just think that's going to sneak up on people because, like, if Chelsea don't get Champions League football, £100 million is basically, I don't know if that replaces it, but I mean, it'll go a bloody long way, won't it? And
I just find it such a weird tournament. And look, I think some people in this industry talk it up because they probably, you know, feel that they have to because they might get a bloody brand deal or whatever. I don't know. But I think fans want honesty.
Next week, we are delighted to be going out to America.
But that's sort of my point. It's like, I think that integrity is so important in football. Like, you know, some Liverpool fans booing Trent, at least they're being honest. And I'm not saying that I won't watch the Club World Cup. I guarantee you, certainly in the latter stages, I probably will watch it. It's not a pre-season tournament. It actually has got integrity as a tournament. There is a trophy there to be won. I'd say I'm in integrity, no, intrigued, yes. No integrity because when you look at the Premier League, Liverpool and Arsenal are top, Barcelona are top of La Liga, and none of them are there. So I don't think Club World Cup doesn't really match up to it for me, because if I was to watch Chelsea holding that trophy up, I'd sort of like be going, yeah, but there's teams, you can't. It's like Man United winning the Europa League or Spurs winning the Europa League and saying to Arsenal, we've had a better season than you. No, we've won a trophy. We weren't even in that tournament. So how can you say, you can't say we're better than you. But in relation to the Club World Cup, I'm sort of like, I'm intrigued as to see how people take it. Because if I'm Arne Slot and Arteta, I'm sort of like, hey, this is great for us because we're not even there. We get a proper pre-season. We get a load of rest. Man City and Chelsea, how do you approach that? Do you go, let's win it for the money and really exert ourselves and probably kill ourselves at the start of the season? Or do we just, you know, take it as a bit of a pre-season tournament? You know, I don't know how teams like Real Madrid, Man City, Bayern Munich, I don't know how seriously they're going to take it. And then it's like FIFA are going to want them to take it seriously because they want people to watch it. How are audiences going to take it? You know, there's nothing else on, so I'm sure, you know, people will watch it, but how good will it be? It's a big unknown, isn't it? I like the concept of it. I just think the way they've picked the teams is a bit shit.
You know, I think it will sneak up on us as well because it's in that perfect spot of, in terms of men's football, there's nothing on. Mm. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, hang on, it's Al Hilal versus Inter Miami on a Tuesday at 2 p.m. Oh, I'll stick it on. And then with the money involved as well, I think that's what they just need to make more of a
Some of the kickoff times are absolutely crap, though.
It'd be like late, wouldn't it? It'd be like midnight.
Let me just read some out. I mean, look, the funny thing is, you say it's on Channel 5. It's surprising TNT, BBC, ITV, Sky haven't gone for it, especially when you think about Sky in the Baller League. I'm really surprised.
Well, BBC didn't bid for it. I think ITV bid £0 for it and said that they'd show it. And then, yeah, DAZN have got the UK rights and done like one of them cross promotional deals with Channel 5. So
yeah, a lot of the games, I'm just looking at the opening games, are at 11 o'clock at night, 1 o'clock in the morning. There is an 8 o'clock at night game, which is PSG Atletico Madrid. Bayern play Auckland City.
That'd be a bloodbath.
On the Monday, there is no normal game. It's Boca Juniors and Benfica at 11 and Botafogo against Seattle Sounders at 3 a.m.
I'll be doing the watch along for that one.
Chelsea are playing to BC. I've never heard of them. TBC.
Who?
They're called TBC. I think it's to be confirmed.
Yeah. Oh, it is, isn't it? Yeah.
How does it get confirmed?
Oh, because there's that team that have got the same, you know, like Jim Radcliffe. They've got the same owners, so right. One of them got kicked out, and there's a playoff.
Okay.
But they are called TBC FC.
There we go. Just talking about the top five race, what were your thoughts on an owner going onto the pitch, very frustrated? Now, we've got the backstory to this now. We didn't have this yesterday. We just had Gary Neville saying it was scandalous. Interestingly, apparently it was to do with the injury to Awonye up front, who went sliding into the post, said he was okay to carry on. They used their final sub, and then afterwards he was like, actually, I'm injured. So they had like 10 minutes of a game they needed to win with a guy who was basically injured. And then the owners come down and not been very happy. Is it scandalous, Will?
It falls into the bracket that you talked about earlier, where, you know, you get people go, you don't want to see that. Well, I do want to see that.
Yeah.
Especially as and also people are acting like this, like this guy hasn't got pedigree in this. Like, yeah. I've not read fully, but some of the stuff I think out in Greece, I mean, far surpasses anything that like this. And yeah, storming a teacup for me. I think people were trying to say that he was deliberating about the poor performance in the Champions League stuff, where, you know, if it is a medical issue, rightly frustrated. Should you go on the pitch and show it? No. But for me, yeah, no worries at all.
Mark, if it's all right for you, I'd like to hear from our halftime sponsors.
Tell you what, if Kevin Keegan was the owner of Forest and he'd gone on there with a pair of these headphones on and going, like, what's going on? We'd love it. I do think there is a little bit of foreign bias here. You know, what's he doing going on one of our pitches complaining? Because it seems to me like he's got a bit of a target on his back, that particular owner. And as you say, he has got form for it before. But look, I don't care whether it's what I said yesterday. If Sir Jim Radcliffe had stormed on the pitch yesterday, not very happy with some of the United players, I'd have changed my mind on him. I'd have gone, yeah, he's one of our own, you know. So, but we like wrestling, don't we? We like a bit of entertainment, and football is entertainment. And I think it's a little bit prudish to go, we don't want owners coming onto the pitch expressing opinions. We want them in the boardroom ripping fans off. No, I mean, look, it's probably not great. And I'm sure the FA will be filing a bloody complaint straight away. But actually, as I said about the Tuchel and Conte handshake, fans are ripped off. Fans are, you know, treated like mushrooms and fed on shit. And when you actually get an expression of emotion from somebody in power, it's actually quite nice to see. So I just suppose it depends what your personality is. I looked at it and went, okay, he's probably overreacted a little bit there. But if you are, you know, pissed off about that result, and it's always nice to see people who are actually in power at your club having a go. It's like when you get a dodgy refereeing decision and your manager comes out and says, I'm not going to speak about the referees. You sort of like go, well, you bloody well should. And then the one who goes and takes the fine and goes, I wouldn't trust him to walk a dog, let alone referee a Premier League match. He needs to get down Specsavers, the absolute shit. And you go, he's getting a fine tomorrow, but go on, you know. So I'm all for it.
Yeah. And I don't know if you remember when we lost the Virtue a couple of weeks back. Tom Wagner was doing that sort of speech up to the players up, and, you know, everyone was criticising him. But it's all for context, isn't it? For me, I know who our owners are. I know what they're about. And for me, there was nothing wrong with that. And it was probably the right time, right place, and a reminder of a good season. And for this, it's a bit different because of the character that we know who he is. But from a neutral standpoint, and now you hear the explanation behind it to do with the injury, people just want to put their own opinion on it and again tell you how to feel and tell you what to think. Like, and I think the manager that Nuno is as well, I think he'll have no problems with it as well. And again, just comes because we've got a quiet weekend and the only thing up for grabs is Champions League football, isn't it?
Yeah, and also I think I've already said this on my That's Football video yesterday, but for Gary Neville to call it scandalous, I just thought, you know, he's not said that on telly, he's typed that. I just think maybe he should have took a beat because...
Well, they've got a Forest rivalry anyway, haven't they, from the other year?
Yeah, you're right, actually, because we've spoken about that before. But I think it's slightly hypocritical to call a manager going on the pitch, showing passion for his club, scandalous when he supports a football club that's got owners who never turn up, have us in massive debt, sacked half the workforce, and are raising ticket prices. It's just, it doesn't really hit the mark, does it?
What did you make of him, the sort of structuring and repurchase of Salford?
Good point for a podcast. I think that I just think it's just, well, we were there, weren't we? We were there. We were at Wrexham Birmingham when Neville and Beckham were there. And
yeah,
having had some experience of Gary and him stealing a couple of ideas from me, I wouldn't be surprised if they were there going, this looks like a good idea. You're really popular, David. You're a bit like a Hollywood superstar. Maybe we'll have a bit of that pie, because they will be able to take Salford into the Championship very, very easily, I would imagine, with that sort of investment. I'm surprised they didn't do it before. I think Wrexham have certainly had a little bit more of a better strategy, but Salford sort of fell flat, didn't it? They had the Class of 92 documentary, which I liked, around Salford. I liked the story around Salford. I mean, I liked it when they had that woman who'd been there for years doing the bacon butties and that. It was really watchable. I really liked it. And then I don't know whether they got bored with the project or they made bad decisions, probably bits of both. But it looked for Salford, it's great. You know, they're going to reignite it. I mean, you've been in that situation. We've monitored Wrexham. You've seen the League One. I think realistically, their 5-year plan is to be in the Championship, isn't it? And that should be quite achievable with, if they get the right decisions. Getting them in the Prem will be very, very difficult.
I just think they've missed their opportunity. Like the Class of 92 stuff and the documentary and everything around that, that was the time to capitalise.
Yeah.
Whereas the business decision behind the Wrexham one, like you hear how they bought it and the sort of key factors they looked into. And one of them was the sort of area it was in was, I think, one of the biggest areas and underutilized areas for potentially building a big fan base, in terms of like, this is what it is now because they're doing bad, but this is what it could be if we started to do well and attract new fans. And then plus with that, their documentary is, I was watching a podcast with Humphrey Kerr, I think his name is, basically the posh guy that is with Ryan Reynolds and what's the other one called? Rob McElhenney. Mm. And he was basically saying that he's got a friend or someone they know who's on the board of a Premier League team. He said top 10. And they'd done a survey in America, I think it was Central America, and basically asked people over there what clubs they knew from the world of football. I think number 3 was Man United. Number 2 was Wrexham. And he said number 1 was AFC Richmond, which is the fictional team from Ted Lasso.
Oh, yeah.
So the Wrexham one's grown an American audience, which obviously commercially has done amazing for them. And I just think Salford have missed out. And like the area it's in, that you know, you're going against United, City, and then got greater Manchester teams. There's so many. I just really think they've missed the opportunity and missed the boat. And now they're sort of stuck with this team. Yeah, I really can't see them. Yeah, maybe get to Championship, but after that, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I do think... you look at Birmingham, it's massive. Wrexham, quite a big club and always has been. I mean, contextually.
That shouldn't mean success, though, should it? Like, because I was thinking this, I was like, well, Salford haven't got the fan base, but then Bournemouth have been in the Premier League for,
yeah,
what, burgeoning on 10 years?
Yeah, good point. I think they can get to the Championship. It's going to need money. They're going to have to get the Disney project. And I think that's why Beckham being involved is really important, because I don't think Beckham was massively involved before.
Yeah, I don't know if it's restructured. It seems like they've added stuff on and changed a bit. It just, yeah, I think this is a new start for them. But
look, Gary Neville's very ambitious. He'll have seen, he's got his fingers in lots of pies. He's got his regeneration project with Sir Jim. Yeah, he's got the overlap. He's got Sky. He's probably looked at Birmingham and Wrexham and gone, I want a piece of that as well. I want to be Gary Neville, the club owner, as well. Yeah, he's got lots of time. He goes to bed at 9:30. He's up at 3. He's got hours between 5 and 6 where he's gone, I can run a football club. So it'd be interesting. I think it becomes problematic for a lot of other clubs that are trying to survive, really, because another rich club comes in, and for the next couple of years while they're in your league, it makes it difficult. But
it's not good. You look at League One this year. Like, you know, so many former Premier League giants, not giants, that's a big, you know, but like Charlton, Bolton, I can't name anymore because I've not thought about it. But like in terms of that league, you know, Derby were down there recently. I think that people sort of go, oh, you can just sort of skip back up and go around there. And it's really not a given.
Yeah, I was looking at that. Charlton at home on Thursday, 0-0 draw against Wickham.
That was awful, apparently. Yeah.
Stockport 2-2. Forgot about the playoffs.
Honestly, like, it's now Blues are finished. Just waiting for football to come around again.
Be big season next season. I felt there was something else I was going to ask you about.
The red cards?
The red cards, yes. It felt
Mings,
to me like
red, a direct... 10-month ban, should be in prison.
Who? Jackson?
No, Mings.
Well, you know, sometimes in football it does happen that it feels like there's a directive. We've got to stamp out elbows in football. And I hadn't really seen a red card for an elbow since John Fashanu and Gary Mabbott. Like, it's just like, it seems like it's been a long time. And then obviously Saturday night, I didn't watch the Villa game, but I heard about the Mings thing and I looked in it and I went, yeah, probably knows what he's doing, to be fair. A bit like the Kulusevski one in the Chelsea game earlier in the season. But I felt probably not a red, really. We don't see red cards for that. And then the very next day, a similar one, and it's a red. And you just feel like Howard Webb's gone, hey, that should have been a red. Any of that tomorrow, get it out. Because I saw what Jackson did. And again, in real time, doesn't really look that bad. In slow motion, it looks like he's had a look at him and he's done a, you know, stone cold stunner on him. You know, it's like absolutely meant it. But I've seen people saying Jackson should be banned for life, this, that, and the other. I was like, I genuinely think that happens so often in football. And I think if he wanted, look, I've seen players who used to use their elbows to purposely hit people in the face. I don't think he was purposely hitting him in the face. I think he was using his elbow to sort of protect himself a little bit. I'm not arguing it's a red, but I just think if that's a red, Mings was a red. And if Mings wasn't a red, then his wasn't a red. And yet again, we've sort of had a directive sort of in between. It's like the Tarkowski foul, isn't it? You know, and next one like that's got to be a red because we missed out on it.
Yeah. No, I think with Mings as well, he's had a few different incidents over the years with like...
But he killed Zlatan. Was it him against Zlatan? Do you remember?
Yeah, exactly. So I think with him, you know, he's sort of got that a bit of dirty nature in him. But it's happened a few times this season. Like you said, like it's like London buses, isn't it? Just like nothing happens and then it's two in one weekend and then it becomes this massive issue. So but the Mings one, yeah. Shouldn't play football again, in my opinion.
What's your thoughts on the? I know you wanted to talk about Barcelona, Real Madrid. Fantastic game. Unfortunately, very inaccessible in England.
I managed to watch it. That's all I'll say.
Well, fair play to everybody who did. My plan yesterday was that obviously I was doing the Man United game, and then I was going to do the Liverpool game, and I knew that the Real Madrid El Clasico Barcelona sort of transcended both. So I was like, I've got two screens. I'll have one with that on and then I'll have that. And then I went to set up a little bit later than I normally do. And I've got United game on. I'm about to go live. And I'm like, where the fuck's Real Madrid Barcelona? So I go on. It's not on Sky. It's not on TNT. Then I go on my DAZN where I have access to different areas. And that didn't have it either. And I was like, so I was even typing who has La Liga rights, because I was just like, couldn't figure out where it was. I think it's Premier Sports, which you have to pay for. That's also got the Scottish Cup. I mean, what have I been missing out on there?
That's why I had it.
But La Liga, really? I mean, like El Clasico, to be inaccessible in the UK is pretty poor, I think.
Well, I think that's almost a topic for discussion, isn't it? Because, you know, we've had those chats around like Liga, and I think they're currently in a battle, not a battle, but they're... DAZN didn't want to buy their rights, I don't think. So they're going to start their own platform, but then DAZN are going to fund the platform and sort of run it for them. So that's up for that one. But nobody, if you're in England, you're not going to want to watch Liga. La Liga doesn't have the same ring to it anymore, really, does it? I mean, Barcelona, maybe it's definitely got a lot better, to be fair. Serie A, not what it once used to be as well. So those European leagues over here, I don't know. I don't know if it's because you get so much stuff fed to you, but back in the day, there used to be so much like, charm and like not nostalgia, but like you were like, oh, who were these over here? And maybe it's just we're getting a bit older.
I certainly think there was a time not that long ago where you could watch Italian football matches, La Liga, definitely, maybe even the Bundesliga.
ITV4 had them for a bit
without having to pay what you know. It would be on normal TV, Sky or TNT. And now I don't know Italian football. What's that on?
I actually don't know.
Bundesliga, really, I feel you can watch.
I feel like
still.
They flip flop a lot as well at the moment because the rights seem to come up quite a lot. But
I mean, I watch a lot of Italian football, but it's on DAZN, so.
Yeah, see? No, but I watched it. I was like, oh, I need a bit of football fix this weekend. And there was still something on the line there, because Real Madrid had to win to get a point behind Barcelona with two games to go for the title. 2-0 up after 15 minutes, Real Madrid. Real Madrid 4-2 up at half-time, then 4-3, then they had a goal disallowed. It was a very good game of football.
Great, hot on the heels after a very disappointing result for Barca. Let's talk about the Champions League final. It's Inter against PSG.
I'm more excited for the Europa.
You took the words out of my mouth, as Meatloaf once sang. That is, I said that the other day and people were like, what are you talking about? I said, Man United Spurs will be a bigger game than Inter PSG. And the only reason Inter PSG will get more views is because it will be more widely screened, because it's got the history. But actually, I think a lot more people will be interested in Man United Spurs. Do you think Barcelona were a little bit unlucky? Do you think that was a bit of a foul by Dumfries on the Barcelona player? I did think it was. I thought it was going to get given.
Yeah, I think. And also, if the referee blows up, then it's a foul and he sort of nips it in the bud. I think you sort of tangle yourself in the play on. And then, obviously. Yeah, but then they've scored now. I can't disallow that. Where it's just like, actually, if you act on your actual instincts and do that, I think it probably was. And I'd rather have seen Barca PSG. I think a lot of people will try and talk themselves into thinking PSG Inter is going to be it might be a good final, but I'm personally just not really bothered about it. And Tottenham United will be very much not a hate watch, but it's more. With that final, it's not who wins, it's who loses, isn't it?
And
what it means for that.
Yeah, it's funny actually. Somebody you know who was at the Blues thing on the other day, one of the coaches came up to me and said he's a Spurs fan, which I didn't know. And I said to him, look, it's not banter. I can't be doing any of that. You know, like Flav and people, all these Tottenham content creators, if they were to ring me up and say, should we do a video? I'd say, sorry, mate, I like your content, but no. I can't be doing the whole, oh, it's the banter cup. It's too big. Like maybe Spurs fans look at it differently because they're used to not winning trophies. But from a Man United fan, the oblivion we're staring into, the trophy will be nice and it will symbolify winning something. But it's just so important. Like, we're so broke, no European football. Yeah. I mean, I even think if United win it, it won't necessarily solve many problems, but it will certainly solve more. But not winning it, oh God, it's just ridiculous, really.
But it's like, I know it'd be good financially, but United in the Champions League next season, it doesn't exactly think like, I mean, if you maybe get one of them playoff places, like that would be half decent. But
it's the revenue.
I know it's the revenue, but I'm from a football side. But for Tottenham, just to see that big Ange premonition and prophecy come true about him winning a trophy in the second season, I think.
I can certainly see it.
Yeah.
I think it's in the balance.
They've got a good record against, haven't you?
Yeah, they beat us last three times. I think it's so hard to call. I'd love Bodo Glimt to have done something in that because I'd have been a lot more confident. But I never like an English final anyway.
Remember Liverpool-Tottenham, that champion? That's one of the worst finals I've ever seen.
Yeah, Man United-Chelsea wasn't great. It's just something about it that turns it into something.
Maybe with Big Anjo, I mean, if he's going to play the way he has been playing, at least it shouldn't be 0-0.
No, shouldn't be.
Any other Bridgeness?
I was going to say, TV wise, I'm watching.
I finished Yellowstone.
Yeah, I thought you'd finished that last time.
No, I'd got to the point of the spoiler alert bit. I've finished it. Nice ending, I thought.
Yeah, I thought it did all right after You Know What, but obviously it would have been better with that. But I think it did okay. Mobland, I'm watching at the moment.
Oh, we're going to start that tonight.
Oh, it's amazing. The great thing about it is that I would have binge-watched that in 2 days, and the fact that it comes out once a week is frustrating, but actually,
yeah,
it's a bit like Game of Thrones. Like, unless someone puts a spoiler out, and it's not that big for anyone to be doing that, I think it's just so good. So good. Yeah. Even though it's got Piers Brosnan in with the worst Irish accent ever, and he's actually Irish, that's really, really good.
Last of Us episode out, which I watched tonight. I'm enjoying that.
I've seen a lot of kickback on that. I mean, I'm not for
the... It's a load of absolute classic, but you know, like people just like to hate on something and then it becomes a thing.
It's her, isn't it? Brilliant. Basically, it's her they're going in on.
Well, yeah, and I think a lot of it's to do with, like, in the game, basically, Abby sort of, it's like a 5-6 year period, so obviously she grows up, whereas yeah. like obviously the film in between this, but I think you just need to get a life.
I've watched some of it. I'm about 4 episodes behind. I saw spoilers for it and I just thought I'm going to give it a few episodes now before I go and watch a few. But I really liked her in Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
I thought she was brilliant.
Oh, she in Game of Thrones?
Yeah, she's in Game of Thrones. I really liked her character in that. I don't like her massively in this, but not to the extent that some people are. And I've never played the game, so...
Oh, yeah, should play the game. 2 weeks' time or 10 days' time, Clarkson's Farm.
Yeah, I was on about that on the stream last night because I said, oh, Will says it's out. And I'm sure he said that 2 weeks ago. And then I looked up and it was still another couple of weeks
23rd.
Away. That'll be
But
good.
They're doing that episode 1 to 4. Then you got to wait a week and then you got to wait another week. But probably be good because I normally watch it 3 times in the first 3 weeks. So.
Are they doing another one?
Yeah, this is 4, 5's confirmed. And then we'll see where we're at and then we'll have a chat.
Yeah, that's good. Trying to think of something else that's going on. I've been watching a lot of classic films recently. Yeah.
Well, I've probably got loads to watch of those. Need some to tick off.
Yeah. So that's where we are.
Lovely stuff.
Writing a book? No, I'm not.
Oh yeah. No. You've already done one.
I know. I'm not really. I forgot I did that.
Very good. Top 5. You in New York? No, but what do you Sunday Times bestseller? That's all you need. Sunday Times bestseller. Get it on the bio. Done. Job done.
Yeah. Bought a nice pair of loafers for the first time ever.
Right. We need to end this podcast quickly.
Not in the loafer stage, no.
No, not for me, no. And the joy and glee that you said that with sort of symbolises the age that you're at, I think, really.
Hey, with the right shade of shorts and a lovely shirt like I'm wearing now. You know, we can imagine this. Yeah. This shirt with a pair of like cream shorts and a pair of tan loafers, pair of shades.
We're going. Are you doing Mallorca this year?
I was going to say, I was listening to those there. No, I'm not going to Mallorca. I don't know. I might do something impromptu, but...
You need to get away.
Yeah.
I always remember when we first started working together and I thought you had holidays, and then I remember you sent me a 7-minute video of you walking around Mallorca talking about Lavia signing for Chelsea. I was just like, just have a holiday.
No. Yeah, well, I think this time last year I went down Brixham and I really liked it. So I might go and do something like that soon.
Lovely stuff. All right, mate.
Yeah, enjoyed that. Thanks everyone who's been watching, listening as normal. Leave us your comments. A couple of weeks and then it's the Premier League's done, innit? How many more weeks have we got? 2?
2-3 weeks, yeah.
2 weeks left. And then it's the great Champions League final that Will's looking forward to. Champions League
Inter
Milan against PSG.
Lions,
he's been begging for
Ashes.
It all season. It's like stunt peg, Bastoni. I tell you what, I love Bastoni. I saw a video of her the other day doing her, I didn't even watch it through because it was entitled Building My Most Complete Serie A Player. And I just thought, she's just going to say Bastoni.
She does love the Serie A, to be fair to her.
Yeah, lovely stuff. See. Okay, thanks everyone for listening as usual. Big up Will. Thanks Niall, the producer.
Big up you. Cheers Niall. Big up everyone listening.
Speak to you on the next one.